Joined on the programme now by the Bishop of the Diocese, Ruffo, Bishop Niall Cole. Good morning to you, Bishop. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
How does the title sound? I know it's not about a title, right? But, you know, it must feel a little surreal still, does it?
It certainly does. And at the rehearsal on Friday night, I was sort of very emotional because that's the cathedral where St. Eunice, where I was ordained to the priesthood in 1988. And so, therefore, it has always been a very special place for me. And I think of my days of when I was studying for the priesthood, coming into the cathedral, and I never would have thought that I would become Bishop of Ruffo. And so I'm very humbled and very honoured. And of course, I've moved up from Kilkenny, from being Bishop of Austria. I'm not new to the episcopacy, as they say, but it's a great privilege now to be called to be Bishop of my home diocese.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. There is a particular significance, I suppose, to be home.
Yes, I think we Irish people have a particular attachment to place, to home, more than I find in many other nationalities. So, and to be from Donegal is so particular in terms of Ireland and the Irish experience. We're not Northern Ireland, and in a way, we're not the Republic of Ireland. No, we're not the South of Ireland. We're quite different, and we're distinctive, and we have to stand up for ourselves. And I've learned that in the sense of being 3 years bishop in Kilkenny in Austria. That's very much Ireland, part of the old Peel, and they don't have to fight the way Donegal people do. You know, they have good roads, for example. they have very good services. The pharmaceutical industry, the financial services, computers, in a way, they're developed in a way that I would love to see that happening in Donegal. But of course, we'll need roads for that to happen.
Yes.
And so I'm praying that like I say, we Donegal people have a strong, distinctive identity. And
it's funny to people from down the country, if I could put it like that. I think sometimes they think that maybe we campaign and moan, if I could phrase it like that, for the fun of it. And maybe they don't appreciate some of the infrastructure and the employment and their proximity to Dublin that they have, you know, compared to us.
Greg, I think you're flattering yourself.
Right.
The people down there, it's that they don't give Donegal a second thought. And I mean that, like, I love them, many of them are my friends, but in a sense it's so far away. And when most people say, you know, we're growing up, the troubles were on in the north, so they regarded, you know, the six counties, Ulster, as very dangerous, and they weren't brought to it. They didn't visit. And I say that the one time a lot of people in the south did visit Ireland was at the end of the pandemic. Do you remember that summer?
And the staycation.
And you know, the Atlantic, right?
Atlantic Way.
So many people have told me how that was their first time in Donegal and how beautiful the county is and how sorry they were for me that I was out. Did I miss the mountains and the hills and the beaches? And I said I certainly did. But Kilkenny and Laois and that part of the country have their own attractions as well.
You mentioned your ordination in 1988. What age were you when you were drawn to the church, if that's what it felt like, or that you were considering a life in the priesthood?
I went immediately after the Leaving Cert. Mm. And just remember the day of Irish in the Leaving Cert. I went for an interview to the bishop's house and climbed up those big steps. And old Bishop McFeely, it was his last year, he interviewed me and a few other students. That was way back in 1981. So then I started in Maynooth in 1981. And there was a few other...
So you actually, that conversation... that conversation obviously aligned to where you were at. So you enrolled in Maynooth in the same year that you met the bishop.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. The old light word was I was nominated in September then as a student
yes.
for the Diocese of Rafo. But, you know, I never thought at that time. When I went, I said I'd go and test my vocation, to use that language.
I can understand that, though.
But in a way, I don't think I thought I would ever end up staying. Mm. I felt I had to give it a shot, as they would
say. Was there a spiritual draw, though, at that age?
Very much so.
Yeah.
And
so you felt a pull?
Yeah. In fact, yes, I felt this is what God was asking of me. And in a sense, through ups and downs, I've never thought differently ever since.
And did you articulate that to people around you? Or is that something just with the passing of time, it's easier for you to reflect on? I'm just curious as how those conversations
That's a great question, because I don't think I would have been able to articulate that. It was just an intuition, a feeling.
Yeah.
I would say now, in a sense, it's the prompting of the Holy Spirit at work.
But I think that shows a great maturity, even at a young age, doesn't it? To sort of know yourself, that you don't, you know what I mean, that you can keep that within you, but also as an older person to be able to reflect and know it was there.
Yes, later on. Mm. In fact, that was part of my homily on Sunday, because the gospel was the call of the fishermen. And Jesus' words were to them were, follow me. He didn't say, understand me. He didn't say, these are my what I'm going to teach. And, you know, people, in a sense, those fishermen, those first disciples, they followed. And I think it's only later that they understood.
Mm.
And I don't think we ever fully understand this side of the grave, but we have to be open. And I often think that as couples getting married, like, what is more beautiful than a married couple who love each other through thick and thin, who are there for each other? But it's an act of trust, isn't it?
Yeah.
To, you know, to commit your life to another person. And so it's not just, what I mean by that, it's not just priests who have to discern and make commitments. We all do. And I'm just giving you that one example.
No, I understand, yeah.
Of marriage.
So people can tap into that, into themselves, to understand what you're talking of in your experience.
Because we all mature and develop and change. And I suppose a good marriage is about a constant renegotiation, isn't it?
Mm.
As people change, we have to, in a sense, continually negotiate or realign.
You're like a well-thrown boomerang, because you always come back,
yes.
right? So
yes.
1991 was a return to St. Eunan's College as a teacher.
As teacher and chaplain.
Yeah.
And that was me returning to the school that I had left in 1981. So it's 1989 I arrived back there. Right.
Was it?
It was 1989 to 1991.
Until 91, of course.
91,
okay.
yeah.
So it was something of a first full circle for you.
Yes.
And you continued studies.
Yes.
That was a choice.
Well, actually, no. Bishop Hegarty sent me first for teacher training, and then I returned to Rome and I did further studies, a doctorate in theology. That was from 1992 to 1995. And then I taught in a seminary for a few years in Carlow. And then I returned to Boomerang, as you say, to Donegal. I was curate in Dunloe and teaching and chaplain in the Rosses Community School. And that was a great time for me as well. And then after that, because I had an academic background and a teaching background, I was suitable for a job in St. Mary's University College in Belfast, which is a college of Queen's University. So I was there for about 18, 19 years and teaching teachers, primary and secondary. And so
have you seen your movement as a gift, if you know what I mean, or has it been a series of emotional pulls? Now, I know there's a sort of an acceptance that really you can never become too attached, because you never know at what point right you might have to leave. So has that been a gift, the times that you spent in certain places and then moved to others? Or has it been a series of breakups?
Well, moving is always difficult. To uproot is always difficult. But in a sense, the life of the priest is like that. You know, that you're sent to where the need is. And so that's what happened in my life. You know, I had I had both the pastoral background and the teaching background. So tasks came my way, and they found it hard to find people to teach theology.
Mm.
And then by 2020, Bishop McGuckin was sure that it was time for me to return.
Well, I would argue this is actually the peak of your career, your life so far, because you were blessed with Drumhome.
Yes, correct. Where you have roots. and I was there, you know, at the height of the pandemic.
Yeah.
The church was closed nearly all the time that I was there. But in a fabulous way, I got to know a lot of people very well, because lots of people came to the parochial house to meet me.
Mm-hmm.
And they were curious as to who this new priest was. And then as well, they were anxious, you know, the old and the sick were anxious that they would still be visited by the priest. So with the pandemic restrictions, I just couldn't go willy-nilly. So I said if people rang and wanted me to come to visit them, I would. So I did. And remember back in the pandemic, there was less pressure, less rush. So I had the privilege of, you know, visiting lots of, you know, old people and throughout the parish of Drumhome, and the time to talk.
Yeah.
And I look back on it now as a great privilege.
Mm.
And then I was moved then to Town of Willie. And again, it was quite, the pandemic restrictions, we were just beginning to emerge from them. It was a strange time, wasn't it?
It really was.
But there's a lot of good in the time that we had time for things, time for family,
friends. We did, and I think we ended up with a better understanding of things as well. I think we got a better understanding of isolation, loneliness.
Yes.
You know, things that people endure all of the time and continue to do so. And I think actually we've forgotten some of the lessons learned, but we all got a sense of what rural isolation, for an example, can feel like.
Yes.
So do you aspire to be a bishop as a priest? Like, are you allowed ambition? Not you personally, but, you know, because obviously we've had to jump quite a far way forward, and we're almost right up to your appointment as Bishop of Ossory. You pronounce it differently. How do you pronounce it?
Ossory,
okay.
Yeah, that's correct.
So we're almost getting to that point now. Does a call to be a bishop come out of the blue?
It does.
Yeah.
You don't canvass for it. It isn't advertised. But there's a process that is in place. You know, people are written to and asked to nominate candidates, and there's quite a close scrutiny.
Mm.
And your question, I don't think anyone would aspire to be a bishop. I don't mean that. That's not false humility. It's a difficult old job, and it brings a lot of responsibility.
Yes.
And the only way that one can exercise the office is that if, you know, the people and priests, in a sense, support you and pray for you and, you know, work with you. And because often you have to make decisions.
Well, the book also stops with you.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not like in certain businesses, people can be quite clever at moving responsibilities around, if you know what I mean. But ultimately, the book stops with you.
Yes. And so that's very... So I have 3 years of experience of that now. And we're living in a changing church. You know, there are fewer priests. You know, there's decline in practice, and you know there are difficult decisions probably that lie ahead. You know, and like I always say about, you know, we have so many churches and chapels in Ireland because they go back to a time when people didn't drive, how to support that network of churches into the future
will be a challenge. That being said, in Drumhome, you know, Lahibar Church used to be a regular Sunday Mass, and then obviously because of pressures and what have you, perhaps not as regular, and we'll see situations in Turban and Creasland. People would, you know, there's been some, it's understanding and how things are communicated. Do you think that's important? So if you do have tough decisions about how the church can function practically, Do you think communication with the congregation is important?
Communication is essential. And in the life of the church today, there's a much greater emphasis on lay participation. You know, each parish having a parish finance committee and then a parish pastoral council where issues are discussed. I think looking to the future, there will be far more lay ministry, lay responsibility. Mm. But we have to work on that together.
So in terms of any decisions you might have to make, is that an ongoing process? How does that work? If it means a priest covering a couple of parishes or whatever the ins and outs of it might be, is that an ongoing work? Is that work you've begun already? Is that something we should anticipate?
Well, the diocese that I'm just leaving in Austria is much shorter of priests than Rafoe.
Mm.
And they have quite an advanced project of building what they call pastoral areas.
Mm.
So that's where you put three parishes together, and maybe have one or two priests serving those. And so there are models out there. It's not a one size fits all. We'll have to work on that. And I should say that the Diocese of Rafoe, relatively speaking, has younger priests, and we have five students for the priesthood.
Which is impressive.
So we're not in the same situation as, say, Austria is. So pray that the Holy Spirit will send us vocations, and that the life of faith will be treasured in our communities and in our parishes as we look to the future.
If you were Jim McGuinness and you had a 3-year plan, okay. But in terms of, I'm on about now, not whatever decisions that you may have to make, but in terms of where you'd like to see the church and its place amongst the community and participation on it and in it, is there anything that you would like to do over the next number of years different?
You asked me earlier about my student days.
Yeah.
I remember in 1987, just the year before I was ordained to the priesthood, Cardinal O'Fee spoke at a synod in Rome called by Pope John Paul II. And in it, at it, he said on his feet, he coined a phrase. He says, the task of the church today is to awaken the sleeping giant of the laity. So I think that image is wonderful, that The church is the people of God,
mm-hmm.
and trying to help people awaken to their faith, to the fact that they're loved by God and that they're called to love of God and neighbour. They're called to build the kingdom every day. And that's my priority, is to help awaken people to the meaning of their baptism. And when I was in Drumahome and in Town of Willie, I think the thing ministry I enjoyed most was baptism,
mm-hmm.
because at the actual liturgies, you had a chance, and in the preparation, to talk to the parents about the meaning of the faith.
Yeah.
And see, I think in Ireland in the past, faith was something tribal. It was handed on in a tribal way.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in Kilkenny with the herding, they're hugely into the black and amber. And they don't have to think about who am I going to support. They're born into it. And Donegal's just the same, with our St. Gaelic football. But in a sense, that's what religious faith used to be like. You were born into the Catholic tribe or the Presbyterian tribe or the Church of Ireland tribe or the Methodist tribe and whatever. And the transmission of faith was easy. Today, the transmission of faith is not easy because we live in a very, very secular, materialistic world.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not to say that having, in a sense, experimented with that post-Christian world, that many people will say, listen, we want more for our children.
Yeah.
We want more in terms of giving them a meaning and a purpose in life. We want them to teach them to pray so that they'll know that they're never alone, especially in the most difficult situations. So what I'm trying to say is, I think there's every chance that many people will make the choice of faith, but it'll not be in the tribal way of the past, but in the personal way that's suited to today.
Okay, and the challenge is reaching those people, and it sounds very much like a challenge you're up to.
Yes.
Bishop Niall Cole, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.